Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. You move what? No what?
I just want to make sure I actually pressed the record. You're on the air.
There you go. So are you now.
The word was here.
So we actually got through right speech yesterday, didn't we? How neat was that?
Very
good. Totally transforming the whole
It seemed like it should have been longer, though.
Oh, did it?
Like, right, you'd think right speech would encompass a lot of talking. A lot of talking.
Like idle chatter, for example.
Or like the other ones, there's a fair bit of explanation that kind of goes with it.
I think in a lot of ways, right speech is pretty apparent to all of us because we know when we slander someone, we know that we're doing that.
Yeah.
We can feel ourselves trying for something. And right view is, or right understanding is a little more, it takes more time. Mm. You're told something lots of times and then eventually you realize it for yourself. Right view or right understanding is requires a lot of time. But you know when you tell a lie, you know you've told a lie. You can have 1,000 reasons. Well, I didn't want to upset her, or, you know. But you know that you haven't told someone what you really feel or what you think is.
It doesn't matter what you say.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, that's so true because every word is always a lie.
Yeah.
It always leaves something out. Mm-hmm. The difference between language and experience is profound. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know that Zen saying, words are like fingers pointing to the moon and not the moon. Words show you a direction to look or...
But they can connect you with kind of an experience too, don't they? Well, I guess that's what you're saying.
Yeah, the experience, the word is like a pathway.
Yeah.
But there are many words. There are many languages.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. You know more than one language.
Yeah.
So many languages. And sometimes in this language, this word works better. In this language, this word. For you.
Yeah.
Or for someone else.
There is no word for it in the other language,
that's right?
Yeah.
So quite often that's true. When I could speak Thai, I was surprised at the variety of words for types of starch foods, like rice and things. Had no idea. Because we don't have those in English. It was very interesting, you know.
So words are always only based on past experience, then?
They are. And they're based on... projecting the past into the present or future, actually.
But if I have an English past where I'm not exposed to 27 different kinds of rice, it's 27 different kinds of rice and the words for it are going to be as foreign to me as the 57 different words Inuit have for snow or those kinds of things that come out of
your experience,
a tribal location.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, like, lying is a very personal choice of how to evade this or do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was speaking to someone the other day whose son has some mental problems. And she was telling me that he asked her whether she had told anyone else about something that he confessed to doing. And she had told 3 people, because she wanted to talk about it with someone. So she told him no. And then she was telling me this, and she was verifying it because I didn't want to upset him. But she knew she was lying. She didn't say, yes, I told three people, but none of them will say anything. Hmm. He knew all three people. She could have... He knew that they were his friends. Hmm. But she didn't want to be wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
She did not want to be wrong. She wanted to be right in his eyes. That's so simple, isn't it? Don't we do it all the time? We just slightly change something to suit who we're talking to. Just a slight little, just a tinge difference here.
That happens pretty quick.
Yeah, and it's so fast. And to actually see that, so that you actually learn something about words. Now, words are for your heart, not for the exact truth. If you ask me about Dr. Ang, I will tell you. I will say, this is between you and I. If you find it's important to tell him, that will be your business. I appreciate his kindness. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. Sometimes one person is good for someone, sometimes another person is good for someone else. Mm-hmm. It always is very, very much a personal experience. Mm-hmm. That true?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a judgment about anyone else. It's me being honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
If I ask, someone who's allergic to wheat if they'd like a loaf of bread I just made from some wheat I got from a farmer, and they feel like they should accept it because I'm giving something to them and they're obligated to, then they're caught in keeping rules, not in allowing themselves to walk their own path. A lot of the time we're caught in keeping rules, aren't we? Aren't we?
But sure, if the doctor is saying stay off wheat because it's going to be hard for your health, that's what you're calling the rule.
If some people think you should eat wheat because it supports Alberta farmers is what I'm talking about.
That's a different thing.
That's their rule.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there's a right or a wrong. Words aren't right or wrong. They're pointing. A direction. Words are not an experience in the moment. They're based on the past projected toward the future.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But an experience in the moment doesn't have a past or a future.
It's in the moment.
Yeah. When you walk outside and see a rainbow. I mean, you've seen rainbows before. You can call it a rainbow, but that's not the same thing as looking at it and then seeing it be a double rainbow, or is it?
Yeah.
And then you can remember the last double, but that's not the same either. Or the smell of the ozone in the air tonight.
Yeah.
You can talk about the ozone smell in the air, but to actually go outside when you've been inside for a couple of hours and go outside and take a breath and go, wow. That's very different, isn't it?
Yes.
The difference between an actual experience and a literal.
Exactly.
Perspective. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's profound.
But then there are some words that have had some emotional impact with them at some point.
For you or for another person?
Exactly. For me, and the same word for somebody else has no meaning whatsoever.
Exactly.
Same as mucus or the.
Yeah.
But then they have this trigger thing.
Yeah.
So that I find very interesting too, because it's the word itself that's carrying. It's almost like the word is carrying this.
The word is connected to past experience, which is emotional.
Ah. The word is connected with past experience, which is emotional.
All our past experience is like, dislike, neutral.
We have an association with each of our experiences, and it's one of those three.
Yeah, and so, for example, when you're teaching a kid how to talk, it's a spoon, spoon. And then one time they say, spoon, you say very good. So they love saying spoon, spoon. Because you said very good.
No, I was teaching Cambodian women at one time, and they had a really difficult time imagining that a word on the blackboard symbolized a real object. They had problem with the abstract.
Yeah. Especially probably birds, because it's so forested in Cambodia.
No, but the whole notion that there would be a word for fish or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was many of them couldn't read or write, so.
Right.
I would make the F to look like a fish and all that, and then draw a picture of it. But they really had a difficult time understanding that it was sort of an icon, an abstract thought for an object.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they never learned that reading and, you know, that words that way.
I think it has to do with their language, too, probably. I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, in Cambodia, I've been to Cambodia. I wasn't there for a long time, but it's not that different from Thailand in a lot of ways.
And of course,
Vietnam.
If you put down feelings, then you can't really grab a feeling. Or, you know, the idea that there's something abstract that is symbolized by a word.
I watch the way Olivia learns, and she started learning really early, like the spoon thing. And you could tell when she got that positive,
wonderful
feedback, there was like this bulb would go on in it.
Yeah.
But it
early
wasn't
that
she,
you connect
yes.
meaning and words.
But she never got the thing about the sound spoon being this physical object until quite late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, much later than you could tell the connection between the word and
the object.
The wonderful thing that she got back from me or from her mom or
aunt. Yeah.
That came first.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really...
So the words are all there and then
and
then the emotion connects with them.
Yeah.
It's a lot in how the brain forms.
Mm.
And it's a place where, you know... Did you find that action, performance, doing something had language?
When I was teaching it, it still took a while. I mean, if you have an apple.
When they were talking, how did they? Did you? Could you understand what you were talking about?
It really goes back to saying fish or pen or something like this, and then...
Yeah, but those are objects. Those aren't how they use language.
Oh, the feelings, at that stage, we didn't get into that too much. We did what you do with children, the sad face and the happy face. And
but you don't know in their own language what the words were, symbols for. You don't know that.
I'm not... positive.
That would be a leap of faith
because I don't know Khmer.
Yeah, so that would be the interesting link to see how they did use language.
That's right. Yeah.
Because you speak more than one language and you know every language has different ways of describing an object or even the use of whether there's a word for an object.
I learned a lot from that class
about
suffering.
I bet.
Because there was a woman in that class who was almost blind, and she had 20/20 vision. Mm-hmm. And with Pol Pot and the things that went on there, and then I read about it, and some psychologist in California described that there were these women who were blind, but they could see, but they were blind
Yeah.
And because of what they had seen.
Because of trauma.
And they no longer could see anymore.
The trauma, yeah.
That was incredible.
Mm.
Yeah. And especially Cambodia was ravaged.
Terrible.
Very brave for people to leave there. I mean, to have gone through that kind of torment and then actually go away to a new place. I mean, to go to a new place anyway takes some courage, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. But with that kind of tragedy running them, it must have been a wonderful thing to do.
Well, I learned a lot from them.
Mm-hmm. So is that about right speech?
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about right speech? What is it? What did I talk about yesterday about right speech? What does that mean, right speech?
Abstain from harming others.
No slander.
Right.
Abstain from idle chatter.
Yeah.
In other words, keep your mouth shut unless you have something to say.
Speak
and
dharma
don't
or practice.
Don't tell untruths or be deceitful.
No, that's actually right action.
Okay.
But right, no harsh speech. Slander is when you smear someone else's, not the person you're talking to. Harsh speech is when you talk to people, you know, with anger.
Mm-hmm.
That one's harder in our culture, isn't it? You think so? It's hard not to get angry out of nowhere. Don't you get triggered sometimes?
Yeah,
yes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a difference between anger and be
anger.
Very stern.
And no, there isn't that much of a difference. I mean, being able to see that someone is in danger.
Yeah.
But when we think we're in danger, it's anger.
Okay.
When we think someone is causing us a problem, that's anger. We see someone else is in a problem and we want to warn them, that's
what
the harsh speech.
That's
harsh speech. That's like using
cutting
force
to
stop them from a danger.
But is
like as I was running across the street when I was 16, if somebody had said, "Watch out for that truck," that, that might have possibly, had I been listening.
might have been helpful.
We'll never know.
So
that's by the same token, it could be that you hesitated for 1 second and the truck really ran over your head. You never know.
Okay.
So that's not what they mean. What they mean by harsh speech, then?
Harsh speech is when you react harshly, or you're harsh to someone, rather than keeping your heart calm. When you feel threatened, you're going to use harsh speech, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then later, you're going to remember it, and then you're going to find an excuse, aren't you? Well, I already told them 3 times they should have remembered. Whatever. Don't we do that?
Mm-hmm.
We don't realize it hurts us.
So what about constant criticizing?
Slam.
When somebody criticizes and whittles away, that would be inappropriate speech, wouldn't it? Or inappropriate action.
No, that's their problem. That's their path. They're learning something there. They are chenrezig to you. They're showing you how to be compassionate. Isn't that a bugger?
But for us to
isn't that just disgusting? Wouldn't you just like to trade that one in?
Yes, I would.
Because it gives you a way of practicing, of switching your focus from you don't like what they're saying to, gee, those are beautiful earrings.
Mm-hmm.
I can still keep the same focus, but I can switch it to something I like rather than something I dislike. Every one of the mind states has a value. It's whether they're pulling us a habitual way or we're using them. If I decide that someone who is angry is actually being the Chenrezig, showing me how to deal with anger, or with seeing what I don't like to see, ignorance, I can actually pay attention to something beautiful about them. And immediately the energy between us changes. It's a choice, but it's not an easy choice. Especially in our society. Isn't that true?
Absolutely.
What were you going to say? So harsh speech, if you're doing it, you know that you're doing it, don't you?
Yes.
But there's something driving you, isn't there? Is it perhaps a slight state of fear that you're going to lose something or somebody else is going to want something that you want to keep to yourself? Or is it possibly that? Could it be? You're trying to protect a self. I sure hope you get that book.
No, but the napkin's in the wrong place. That's my fault. Very quick.
It's very fast. And can you imagine if you didn't have a body that slowed it down? Mm-hmm. How fast that would take you into a health state? It's not worth it. Whatever emotional patterns we don't check are going to take us when we leave our bodies. You should really think about that.
Could you talk a bit more then about how does the body slow down these patterns?
Because the emotion has to go through the whole body. It doesn't. The mind doesn't just react.
Habitual patterning.
Yeah, it still has to go through the body. You can feel your body tighten up or relax, can't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that gives you a chance to say, oh, this is anger. You know it is when it's coming up, don't you? You can see it, can't you? Mm-hmm. You can see yourself not wanting to see me in the market.
Yeah.
You can see yourself doing that.
Yeah.
And the minute you see it, there's just this slight moment where if you really have looked at it enough time, you realize you don't like how it feels. Mm-hmm. So that goes back to right understanding. Being told what not to do and knowing for yourself. Mm-hmm. Or being told what to do and knowing for yourself. So you see it and then later you say, I wish I hadn't done that. You know, anybody in this room ever say that? Oh, I wish I hadn't done that. And then say, rather than I wish I hadn't done that, oh, I'm such a... Say, oh, I would like to catch it sooner next time. Mm-hmm. Set the wish into an aspiration. Use the awareness that you really don't like doing that. You don't like the feeling it leaves you with. Set it into an aspiration. You set that up into an aspiration, you're starting another possibility. You think, oh, how could I have done that? You're just doing the same thing, but now to yourself. Is that true? Is that useful?
Yeah.
It's still the same trip.
I've caught myself the odd time recently that, like, when I'm in that anger state, where would I be if I wasn't in my body? Like, it started to occur to me.
Fantastic thought.
You know, like, where would I be? Like,
yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
It's like a nanosecond. But.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Because that's the real point. Anger is hell. All we can see is what we don't want to see.
Right.
Anger fixates us on what we don't like, whether it's ourselves or someone else. Doesn't it? Sharp point. And whether it's self-criticism or, you know, later after the fact of ourselves, you know, it's still anger. Isn't it?
Yes.
And it doesn't feel any better whether I'm beating somebody else up or beating myself up. It doesn't make any difference to how I feel.
But it's a training, yeah?
Yeah, it's all a training. Learning how to be angry was a training.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of like, you know, so I, you know, might wonder where I was this afternoon. Well, I crawled up, climbed up there, and I sat by that waterfall, and I watched it. And after an hour and a half, I moved three rocks, and it changed the pattern of the waterfall. And we went, and we looked at it, and we could see a slight change in the waterfall. He had his own way of getting the message across, didn't he? Nanjo Rinpoche, when we went to Norway, he disappeared for about 3.5-4 hours one afternoon. We were camped up above the Arctic Circle in tents. So it was quite nice because we could play bridge until 11:30 at night because it was summer. Didn't need candles or anything. The light was so... And you all had to learn to play bridge if you traveled with Ananda Bodhi or Namjong Rinpoche. Yeah, he used to choose me as his partner quite often. What have you got in your hand? Give me your hand. Let me see. Oh, no, you should give me... I learned quite a lot from him. So he disappears one day, and then he comes back in time for the 4 o'clock class, and he says, well, some of you are probably wondering where I was. You see that waterfall up there? I went, climbed up there, this, you know, this, where it's very, Norway can be quite sharp hills, it's beautiful country. We rented cars and drove from Germany up through to Norway, and that was quite an adventure. Some of our car mates. Not me, of course. You understand that. I was very decent. And he put three rocks in the waterfall, and it changed the stream slightly. And he came back and told us, and that was his way of saying, if you really want to change the stream, whether it's emotional, you can do it. But you have to really be observant enough to see it when it's going and know where you want to put the no, stop, no, stop, no, go that way. You have to really want to start another stream. And it isn't a matter of stopping the stream. I can't say this often enough. Every one of the mind states is useful. It's not a matter of trying to get rid of anything. It's a matter of you riding the horse, not the horse riding you, of you having a choice of how you want to use that energy. It is so true. You do not try to be right. You do not try to be good. You try to be open and have choice. Cease to do evil. Learn to do good. What? Of what?
Ignorance and obscuration.
No, good and evil. Right and wrong. Duality. There is only the moment. Duality is based on past and future. Subject-object. Looking at a rainbow is just here. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just here. There's no good or bad. And then a minute later, oh, that's like that rainbow we saw, remember? Subject, yeah. Object. But when it's there and we're just seeing it, when you hear a bird or you sit standing somewhere and a gopher jumps out of the hole, oh, a gopher, oh. You don't even say go for it, you go, oh. Is that true?
Yes.
And that's a power, isn't it? Isn't that a power? Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of like being able to choose how your response is going to be. Not to get rid of anything. There ain't nothing wrong with any of your mind states. Isn't that just a bitch? Isn't that disgusting?
Then why are we here?
You are here to ride them rather than have them ride you. Because most often they take you. Did you feel happy about telling us you go and smoke a cigar? No. You felt kind of awkward about it, didn't you? Did you?
Okay.
Yeah. But why?
Well, because it's a lot of people.
Yeah, but you, that wasn't necessarily me, and that's not you. You actually enjoy it, and talking to people there. So why wouldn't you share your enjoyment with me? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Huh? Why wouldn't you let yourself be who you are? Maybe you're going to teach other people that smoking cigars is just as good as drinking beer.
Oh, it's better.
It's better. Exactly.
But the two go together.
Yeah, they do often. Or smoking marijuana, or, you know, picking up prostitutes, or, you know, going shopping, or making a good meal. It's something for enjoyment. Isn't it?
Apparently.
Notice how you feel slightly edgy about me saying this in public, on tape. It's a very interesting idea, isn't it? That whole thing about purify the mind of right and wrong. Because don't we just have all our rules? Don't we? Rather than seeing everybody is on their own path and they have to learn the way they're learning. Would that change the way you looked at people?
Definitely.
Yes.
So when you do one of the dissolutions at the end of a sadhana, so everything dissolves into light, which dissolves into you, sometimes in your heart, sometimes above your head, and then that dissolves into light and that fills your body, and then that dissolves and there's only this little dot left at your heart, and then that dissolves. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
And then instantly you re-arise as what? A Buddha. Awakened. That is to say, just a radiant being in the moment, like seeing rainbows like you've never seen before at Iguazu Falls, five of them over the falls after you've trekked there forever. And these rainbows, it's like, oh, and the falls are, you know, and you've climbed down to the most precarious spot to see them. And the rocks are slippery and you've managed. You're not dead and you're there and it's so incredible. And then you see these rainbows gleaming and changing and dancing. It's like this energy that goes through your body and you're not even a body anymore. There's just this energy, isn't it? That was nice. So there's this energy of your being, maybe clear light, maybe, you know, if you put the energy up your spine and up above your head, there's a little telephone booth up there, and just above the telephone booth there's the electricity that powers it.
You better stop talking.
The electricity that powers it, and when you touch the button of that electricity, it streams down. And your whole body is an energy field. So all beings are the Buddha. You are not separate from being totally energy in the moment. And then you see all other beings as the Buddha as well. And so is everybody else. No inherent self. no inherent other. Everything is dancing. Everything is... Every 6 years, every molecule in your body changes, eh?
What about my brain?
I don't... What brain? So there's a continuous dance going on. Everything is energy. Everything is dancing. But then there is this fixed self, the illusion of self. That refuses to believe that. Excuse me. I know who I am. You got a problem with that?
No, not until I figure.
And everybody else is the same, always dancing, changing energy. That's no inherent object. These are the stages of coming to a realization in the moment. So when someone is slandering you, or you hear about that or something, you can get mad, or you can think, oh, that's an interesting path that they're on to Buddhahood. Can't you? It's your mind. It's your mind. My sister was so upset when my mother had dementia. I was so happy. My turn. Payback. I get to take care of her. Okay, Mom, we're going for ice cream. Get in the car now. Oh, ice cream. Oh, good. We'd always drive the same way over the hills, foothills to the mountains, and we'd come over just the back roads and just over the last hill where you could actually see the mountains. And she'd always say, my, aren't they beautiful? You know, dear, you could travel anywhere in the world, but you'll never see anything like that. And I'd say, what a nice thing to say, Mom. And she'd say, well, it's true, dear. I don't think there's anything more beautiful in the world. And sometimes she'd think I was her sister. It was perfect. I got all my vengeance. Okay, Mom, we're going for a drive. We're going to get coffee and a donut. Okay, Mom, we're going to go in the car and see Anne and the kids.
Why do you call it vengeance?
Because it's how she took care of me. It was payback. I had to pay her back. So she took care of all her kids and her nephews and nieces when they needed it. And can't tell you how many nephews and nieces from the Yukon and BC and Ontario came and stayed with us while they went to the university. And you know, she was always out taking care of everybody in the neighborhood. Heard on the news somebody had died at the airport, recent immigrant with his family. His family was there, they didn't speak English. She looks up the address in the phone book. I come home from school. She's not home. There's a pot of stew on the stove simmering away. She says, Cecily, I am here. Please bring the pot of stew here. If you put it in a box with enough cloth, it won't burn you. I get on the bus. I take it to that address. I knock on the door. My mother opens the door, and there's this immigrant family who didn't know that what had happened. And she has managed to find somebody who speaks their language and has told them, and she's there and she's feeding them and she's helping them get through to who they need to in terms of religious services. That was my mother.
Any surprise?
That was vengeance.
Any surprise you are the woman you are?
Yeah, between my mother and my father, whoever made me said, okay, that's it. But that's what, you know, and it was like that, to be able to give it back. It's a very beautiful thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And to be able to do that with all beings, my mother. Because all beings are your mother. To actually be able to refrain from harsh speech. Because you prefer to be a lover. You know that. You know you prefer to be a lover, don't you?
Okay.
You do. Isn't it nice to go outside in the morning and smell a rose? It would be really nice if we could do that in January, but that's okay. You can do it in July. Is that good? Oh my God. Here we go again. I thought I might get through two today, this weekend. So right view, hearing from others, insight in one's own, from one's own being, is the relative right view. Absolute right view is the Four Noble Truths. You remember that? There is dissatisfactoriness. Rather than seeing only your hunger for the next moment or the next object, seeing that no matter how many objects you get or how much next moments there are, there's always going to be the moment after that that you're going to be hungry. Right? Seeing there is no end to desire, greed, hatred, or delusion. There's no end to them. You're going to dislike something, you're going to like something, or you're going to want to not see it. Pretty straightforward. Anybody different than that here? Mm-hmm. No. Okay. So that's like first of the Four Noble Truths is to recognize that there is suffering. Second one is to recognize how it arises. How does it arise? Based on self-grasping. Isn't that? I don't want. Recognize that it's impermanent. Every once in a while there's satisfaction and just openness in the moment. Every once in a while, when you do a really good painting, it's like, oh, wow, that was beautiful. Oh, look at that. Well, it comes out of nowhere, doesn't it? It's like, oh. And just recognizing that state and realizing that state is free of desire. It's just being. And then recognizing that there is a way to achieve that state without losing your intelligence, without going into a coma, without getting stoned all the time, my favorite way, in the past. That's straightforward. Isn't it? More or less?
More or less.
Right thought, we covered. Right speech, the opposite of slander, we covered that. Right action, to abstain from killing and harming. To abstain from lying. To abstain from taking what is not freely given. From improper sexual conduct, like with children or with people who are already married or engaged, or forcing. Mm-hmm. That's pretty straightforward too, isn't it? Mm-hmm. When you do any of those things, don't you justify it? Or hide it. Shame is very considered to be a very useful tool. Not if you use it to beat yourself, but if you use it to see what you don't want to do again. I don't want to do that again. It's very different than, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I don't want to do that again. Okay, I've learned now. I don't want to do that again. Because how many times you go, oh, I shouldn't have done that, and then you do it, and then you say, oh, I shouldn't have done it, and then you do it, and then you say, Because when we disempower ourselves, we give away too much. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. It's disempowering yourself. Mm-hmm. When we give away too much, we start resenting others because we gave to them. When we start resenting others, then we attack. When we attack, then we wish we hadn't done it.
Spinning your tires.
Yeah. But I don't want to do that again. I'd like to catch that sooner. Oh, I'd like to catch that sooner. That's got some power to it, doesn't it? I would like to. Not, oh, I shouldn't have done. Crapola, that one is. Right, livelihood. Should I just touch on it? Purify. Purity of livelihood. That means not making a livelihood out of harmful actions, like selling war weapons, or that makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Or drugs, or stealing things that you've stolen. And the second one is one of my favorite ones. Pure right livelihood is fulfilling one's obligations as much as one is able.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
Fulfilling one's obligations as much as one is able. Not more, not less. Isn't that beautiful?
And constantly looking to see, is it? Because that's always shifting too.
It is so. Just like everything.
I know.
Son of a gun.
The things I could do when my hips didn't hurt,
yeah,
it's not a good idea to do them now. But that's not to say that maybe tomorrow.
That's not.
You know, it's all like, it's all this.
It's a continuous dance.
Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
Dance. It is
yeah,
a dance. Yeah. It is a dance of energy. Everything is.
Yeah. That's actually quite an exciting thing. It's an exciting way of looking at it.
It is.
What one does in a day.
Yeah. It is so.
Can I just share two beautiful experiences that I've had?
I hope so. Can you?
I can.
Oh, would you?
Well, my mother died 2 years ago.
I know.
She was dying. You know, I may have shared this as a native lady.
You have to talk a little louder.
When my mother was in hospital dying.
You have to talk a little louder.
When my mother was in hospital dying, I got a call from a native lady I'd met through some work we'd done with the native community and the Buddhist community. She asked if she could come to the hospital and stay overnight with me and be here with my mother, because she knew my mother was dying. I didn't know you could do that. So we both stayed overnight, and she did some native ceremonies with my mom, and I talked to my mom about Buddhas and, you know, talked to her. She couldn't communicate. She could hear, but she wasn't speaking.
I know, yeah, I know that state.
And then the next night, this lady couldn't stay, so I was able to stay, but I was just so grateful. I was with my mother the night she passed. Well, my father just died 2 weeks ago, and I was at the hospital with him the night before he died, and he'd become somewhat senile too, and he couldn't talk. So I just laid on his chest and had contact comfort with him to give him all the love I felt. And I'm just so grateful that I had those experiences
with
both parents.
It's an honor, isn't it?
Oh, because they gave so much, you know, like you're saying, giving back.
It's an honor.
It was.
Yeah.
I was so grateful.
Yeah.
So tremendously grateful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a real honor.
Yes. Yes, so, yeah. And then, I was with a guru, Deva, an Indian teacher in Saskatoon, just...
Your voice is dropping again.
I was with a teacher from India just on Wednesday in Saskatoon, and I asked for a blessing to do with a health challenge I have. But he manifested something, and he manifested this cross for me. And I grew up Catholic. That was my original training, my tradition. And I'm just so grateful for it, because what I learned from my father was he was on his knees every night, every morning. And this is like a blessing from my father. So
it is, isn't it?
Oh, it's just lovely. Wonderful. Yes.
That's very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to share that.
So any last questions, answers, comments, or complaints? We got 5 minutes left. So of course, we can extend it into 20.
There was something about the following the way the Buddhist person is supposed to, and not getting caught up in what is sort of un-Buddhist, but still being able to relate to things in a way where it's still satisfying. Like you sort of were, I think.
Do as much as one is able? Was that you were talking about? No.
No, something about how much, I guess, you can enjoy something without it being
the way you would do it, or what you would believe.
Without it becoming
wrong?
Wrong.
Yeah. That's because if you really recognize, Otto, that everyone is on their own path, and everyone has their own way of learning. You have your way of learning, don't you?
Yeah.
She has her way of learning. He has his way of learning. I have my way of learning. I can't walk the path that you walk. I have to learn the way I will learn. You can't walk the path I walk. Be grateful. You have to learn the way you will learn. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah.
Do you have brothers or sisters?
Lots of them.
So do they all do the same thing you do?
No.
Do you expect them to? Each of them is different.
Yeah.
Each of them has different characters, don't they?
Yeah.
This one's going to go that way, this one's going to go that way, this one's going to go that way. So, but each of them is going to follow their own path to what they need to learn.
And that's okay.
So respecting them for what they need to learn,
yeah,
without holding back from doing what you can do to help them. Like if you see someone stealing, you could say to them, if you know you can't say anything about it because they'll swat you, you can say to them, does that feel good? I stole something once and it didn't feel good to me. You can bring up question for them. But you don't preach to them.
Well, can that be stealing if you don't want the other person to covet, I guess it's called? Like if you don't want the other person, and you're doing something, but in order to know that to do it most efficiently, it is good to sort of like keep it away from other people's business, because other people will, it'll deviate to make the whole goal different.
If that feels right to you, you do that, and
yeah,
then you see whether that works. Then do you feel like you're afraid, or you know?
I
can
know
you give me a little more clear example, or is that possible?
There are things that I'd like to get done.
Yeah,
and I can't get them done because everybody in a certain realm, like there's everybody sticks their nose in there, and and then it, I can just sort of, okay, well, lessen the goal of trying to do that, acquire or something to see it finished.
All you got to do, my friend, is ask yourself why it's so important for you to get it done. If you think it will give you satisfaction and make you feel easier, then you say, I'm going to do something, I don't want anybody to interfere with me, thanks a lot, and you do it. Yeah. If you feel like there's some kind of perfection that you need to follow through, you do the same thing, but you tell him, I'm a perfection addict, and I have to do this, so don't bother me for this day.
Right.
You do as much as one is able. But don't be afraid of honesty. Don't be afraid of honesty.
Yeah.
Of telling me about cigar smoking. Don't be afraid of that. Okay? Open yourself more.
Okay, yeah.
So you're more able to be honest with others. You do have rights to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
You do tend to try to be aware of what other people expect of you more than you take care of yourself. Yes. Shall I say it again?
I heard you. There was probably a lot of activity going on when you were saying that.
You do tend to try to be more aware of what other people expect of you than of what you want to do for yourself.
Well, it's in a respect, sort of, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, you do that. You do that. You're more aware of what you other people might expect of you.
Okay.
Than you are for what you would do for yourself.
True.
Okay, so maybe that's what you need to change. Maybe you should be less interested in what other people expect from you and be more willing to give to yourself.
But isn't that selfish?
No, it's selfish to try to please everybody. Bad, Cecily. Bad. It's selfish to try to please everybody. Why are you doing it? Well, because I should.
Okay.
That's selfish. Isn't it?
Yeah.
He said grudgingly. Why can't you give to yourself? You know? I think you're worth it. And I have extremely good taste, by the way.
I honor that.
Okay. It's an interesting line, though, isn't it? Between what you think people expect and what you need to do for yourself. It's an interesting line. And when we don't give to ourselves, we can't give to others. Because there's one part of ourselves that's sort of wishing that we could have done that. Is that true? If we don't give to others, we can't give to ourselves. Because there's one part of us that are wishing we had done something for the other. Yeah. So you look at which one is out of balance and you feed that one. For you, it's giving to yourself.
It's okay.
Good. It's very okay. Do you want me to write you a note?
Sure.
Give me a piece of paper. Oh, you don't have one. No. Oh, get some paper and then I'll write you a note.
Yeah, I've in the last bunch of years, I've been really a feeling for myself. I don't know. I've just really lost a lot of this. It's not there.
So it's time you brought it back. I think it's time you brought it back.
Is there a book?
Yeah, it's called you. It's really easy to read, just feel it. So what I was saying earlier was that, you know, one of the things that some people do, not pointing at anyone or looking at anyone or anything, is that they disempower themselves, they take away from their own right and give too much for others, and then they resent it. They feel bad, something isn't, they wish they could, or, and it's only a matter of time before that resentment back.
That's why I'm so bitter.
It could be. Maybe you just need to give to yourself and you'd be some less bitter.
Maybe.
A little bit of honey in you. Lemonade is good with honey. Take the bitterness and put a little sweet in it. It's like, not true? Having both. The bitterness and the sweet, both. We need them both. But we tend to either go more to one and then the other. When we take away, if we don't give to ourselves, eventually we get bitter or angry or nasty, don't we? Mm-hmm. And we go for revenge and then, oh, why did I do that? And then you give too much. Round and round and round. Anybody in this room ever do that? And seeing it is the most important thing. Seeing that you do that. Then you can start saying, oh, I think I'll do it a little differently. Not falling for it. This is your life. This is exciting. This is your life. This is wonderful. What do you want to do? How about a little experience of totality? Wouldn't that be fun? Yum, yum. It's always here. It's always within reach. It's always within, actually. Totality is always present. We're just too busy with our to-do list. We're always going, I, instead of thou. So is that good for now?
Now is beautiful.
Okay. And thank you for this.
And the city is doing a tremendous amount to...
Yeah, that's what it said, yeah.
They're having the whole opening ceremony. There'll be many government dignitaries there, etc., etc.
Mm. I've been to sacred rituals, relics, ceremonies several times. So
oh, I'm sure.
They're lovely to go to. A lot of fun. You notice this beautiful gold light in your hearts. It just spreads through your body, up, down, out, in, whatever. Tingles through every cell, moves out of your body, fills this room, fills the house, just goes through the neighborhood. It's through Edmonton, right through Alberta, and the whole of North America, right through the world. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, and mind, it's just temporarily assuaged. Anyone you want to pray for, you just imagine them being washed. You think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings who are suffering. So thank you. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you.